And here we go, our final hour on our final day. Sandy Clef with you on your home for the best live and local sports talk, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. And to commemorate the occasion properly, guys, we need some good... The equipment's falling apart in the studio here. Can we have somebody in and... Can they not... reattach the microphone for the good doctor, Rick Perea.
I came in and started breaking things, Sandy.
Start breaking things on a final day. We will get that taken care of. Good to see you, my friend.
Great to be here.
It's final hour.
Oh, my gosh. I feel honored to be here, Sandy.
That's right.
On the last day of your individual show, last hour, and by probably unanimously voted as the most analytical, critical thinking, in-depth, radio host in sports talk radio that I've ever met. So
well,
I feel honored.
We're just moving to the afternoon.
Sure.
Just moving for a few minutes and a few hours to the afternoon alongside Drew Goodman, Scott Hastings. We look forward to that and your continuing contributions on a regular or semi-regular basis.
We hope
to be able to count on that. Dr. Perea, professor of sports psychology, Metro State University of Colorado. And there's lots to talk about in this hour, but we'll talk first and foremost about your journey to the NFL Scouting Combine and what exactly you do there, because this is not your first trip.
Right, exactly.
For this year.
Yes. First of all, I'd just like to say that I had a great trip. I actually flew into Memphis first and met with a few clients and then took a plane on up to Indy. But what I do, Sandy, is I work with some of my clients who are soon to be NFL players, and I prep them for the interviews they're going to have, and I prep them for some of the situations they may get involved in. And I'm proud to say that, you know, my clients did very well in the interview sessions. One of the things I wanted to talk about today is how the NFL really, in some ways, is very archaic in the way they approach the mental process of analyzing players. You know, the NFL does a great job at the combine in terms of the quantitative measurement of, you know, speed, athleticism,
right,
explosion, all that stuff. But they're really antiquated when it comes to the mental processes. And let me give you an example. They use a test called the Wunderlich. And it's a cognitive assessment that I think it was born in the late 60s, maybe mid-60s. Can't really remember. It's been revised a few times. But it's a basic cognitive assessment that's meant to really analyze workers coming into the workplace, their ability to process. That is relevant and germane to, you know, future NFL players. There's no doubt about it. But we have assessments that can go much more in depth and tell us more about players in terms of their neuroticism, their openness, their ability to get along with people and things like that, which are very, really germane to players in the NFL today.
You're talking about psychological activity that starts in the brain, thoughts, perceptions, feelings, that go beyond the Wunderlich, which you say is, as a general mental assessment,
right,
valuable,
yeah,
but it's general.
Yes, it's too general.
And in order to get at the idea, we talked a lot this week about how we can control or determine which players are going to give that little extra bit of effort.
Absolutely.
Hustle,
yes,
so to speak.
Yes.
Can we really determine that,
yes,
through testing?
Absolutely, Sandy. These personality assessments are incredible. Let me educate the listener really what we do here. We're talking about illuminating covert behavior. Overt behavior is that which you see. You know, your husband, your wife, they come home, they're jovial, they're funny, they talk to you. That's behavior that we can observe. But here's the deal. Our psychological cores, Sandy, that means who we really are at a core level, is really covert, our thoughts, perceptions, and feelings. And so while you may meet somebody and say, wow, what a great personality he has or she has, they're very jovial, they're fun to be around, well, in fact, maybe that person has some deep, dark thoughts. And so those personality assessments really illuminate some of those deeper, darker thoughts that we may have. For example, in the Neo 5-Factor 3 that I've used, and I use, you know, right now with NFL players, it will illuminate neuroticism. And that'll tell us really how often people are moody and their mood swings and that type of thing. You know, NFL scouts, coaches, front office people need to know that. They're about to invest millions of dollars in these employees, if you will, human capital. And many of them don't use these assessments at a deep level. So, you know, one of the things that I did at the Combine was to really talk to a few executives, and I met a guy that, you know, just really I think is just the new wave future of front office people, and that's the guy at San Francisco, Parag, and he's just incredible. He's cutting edge. He's like, man, what can we do with this? How do we apply this? But then you got the old archaic guys. They're like, well, it's still football. It's still, you know, just 3 yards in a cloud of dust, or now it's, you know, throw it around the yard. But it's so important, Sandy, that we understand how the psychology influences performance.
You talk about attitude and work ethic being mental processes, and yet we treat the mental side as a separate outside external factor when assessing players. What do you mean by that? And you also mentioned here that 31 head coaches do not know the difference between cognitive and somatic anxiety and its effects on player performance. First of all, who's the 32nd who does get it?
You know who it is. You know who
it is? We talked about him a couple of weeks back.
Absolutely. He's a world champion. Yeah. Coach Carroll. Carroll understands clearly, Sandy, and, you know, he goes to great extents to understand the mental side of the game and the psychological side of the game. And I really applaud him because he's a real forward-thinking, cutting-edge guy. He understands that performance is not just only the physiological process, but it's the mental process. And in fact, Sandy, the physical process begins in the brain. It really does. I mean, when you think about, when I work with teams and I work with individual players, I say, okay, when you think about busting your butt going after loose balls, for example, in basketball, you know, where does that start? Does it just start in the body and the somatic aspect? No, it starts in the brain. It starts in thoughts, perceptions, and feelings. So we really got to understand how much the mental side influences, you know, the physiological performance. And coaches are coaches. You know, Sandy, they're not psychologists. Even though some of them will claim to be, or some of them will claim to have a deep understanding of human behavior, and they do to a certain extent, but they're coaches. They're not psychologists, and more of them need to, you know, use people like us to really understand the environment and the culture that they're in. Because I'll tell you this, you know, Pete Carroll has made a model of what can be done if you get guys believing, if you get guys, you know, processing at the mental side, yoga, meditation, all the progressive stuff that he uses, you can see the performance outcome on the field.
Even apart from first and second round picks and perhaps otherwise highly touted free agents.
Yes.
You see the effects of that form of analysis.
I had a great conversation with a few scouts at the Combine, and we were talking about the percentage of what draft choices make it and don't in certain rounds. And Sandy, without sounding sarcastic, I could literally turn my back to a dartboard and throw darts at a board and really score in the same percentage that NFL teams are scoring right now in terms of players they draft in the first five rounds that turn out to be starters or even all-pro type players. We keep hearing on NFL Network, it's not an exact science. Well, they're choosing for it to not be an exact science. They are choosing that direction. And so
they could at least make it into more of one.
Absolutely. They could make it into more of an exact science by going to the mental side. And just because you don't know, that's fine. You're a coach. But you need to really employ somebody that has this competency and acumen to help you better assess the performance of your draft choices.
303-228-1043, 295-88 on the Total Beverage text line. When you go to the Combine, you're doing these personality assessments. Does the general thinking now place more importance? Let's go back a little bit. 5 years, 10 years, 15, 20. Has there been, however gradual
right.
it may have been, has there been some evolution?
There's
you
been,
perceive?
Yes, there's been some evolution, but it's not a lot. And here's the reason why. As you know, I do some work with Alabama football, and I talked to Joe Panunzio the other day. And again, he says things like this to me. He says, you know, there's a lot of kooks in your business. And I said, what do you mean by that, Joe? And he says, you know, there's a lot of guys in your business that really just don't understand the climate and culture of sport. And I understand what he's saying. You know, one of the reasons that coaches are not more apt to use some of the mental and psychological approaches is because, you know, the football world is a tight fraternity. And if you don't have an understanding of their climate and culture, they probably don't want to bring you in. And I understand that. There's just not a lot of people who do have that football background and competency that are PhDs, that are, you know, clinical guys. I mean, that's just the reality of it. But there is some movement. There is a lot of movement, Sandy, in the women's side of the game, and I think that's very interesting. You know, a lot of our clients are university teams and professional teams that are women gender-based, and I think for whatever the reason is, a lot of women are more open to this mental processing side. But we'll get it going. I mean, we're that's what we're doing. We're fighting the good fight every day.
Some questions coming across the Total Beverage text line at 29588 that we'd like to address with you. Dr. Rick Perea, our studio guest for the hour. Sandy Clef with you on your home for the best live and local sports talk, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Sandy Clough with you on your home for the best live and local sports talk, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan, 303-228-1043, 29588 on the Total Beverage text line. Dr. Rick Perea, our in-studio guest for our final hour here in the morning on the final day of February 2014. All right, Dr. Rick, we have a few texts asking about Richie Incognito. Dr. Rick, what is your take on Incognito? Is he insane? Serious question. How did a guy with his sort of mental difficulties get into the NFL in the first place?
Yeah.
How has he survived as long as he had, even in some quarters, an admired figure?
Yeah. Well, to answer the first question is, you know, is he insane? I think the question was, no, I don't think he's insane. I just think he really is expressing some things, those covert behaviors that personality assessments illuminate. You know, when you go to the combine and these interviews are taking place, one of the things that I notice, and again, my job today is not to bash the NFL, but as a critical thinker, I need to illuminate some of the deficits that are really occurring. So when you have teams interviewing players, you're having, you know, people that are employed by the team, front office people, scouts, and even coaches. And while that's good and fine and dandy, but oftentimes they don't know the right questions to ask, Sandy. They don't know the questions to illuminate particular covert behaviors. And the personality assessments are really what illuminate that. So Richie Incognito has kind of been, you know, the poster child for this maladaptive behavior. But there are other people in the NFL that have the same thoughts and perceptions. So I don't want to throw him under the bus. I think we just need to be more in-depth in the way we analyze mental process in the NFL. Like I said in the first segment, we've got to use more personality assessments. We got to bring on more, you know, experts in the mental enhancement field that can really assess this. Because, you know, when I was having dinner with people at the combine, there's just so much discussion about this kid's running 4.4. This kid has a 40-inch vertical. And I'm like, you know what? That's fine, but that goes nowhere without mental balance, competency, and acumen.
What assessments from the 303 are done to evaluate anxiety in players?
Well, there's specific anxiety assessments that we have out there. And we can break it down into cognitive and somatic. Somatic is body, and then we also have cognitive. So there are a ton of assessments that we can use, and we can be very specific. And that's what's really neat. So for example, the process now for the NFL is the free agency period's coming up, but then leading up to the draft – is teams will bring in their top 4, 5, 7, 8 players that they really are considering drafting. That's when you can really get in depth with specific personality assessments that will illuminate some of these thoughts and perceptions that we may not want to have on a team. For example, in the Neo 5 Factor 3 that we use, it illuminates openness, okay? So let's say you draft a player at a corner, and for whatever reasons his hips are not as free as you thought. His COD, his change of direction, is not as good as you thought. So you end up moving him to safety. Well, if he's not very agreeable, we can illuminate that in personality assessments. And so that'll tell us, is that player going to be willing to move positions in the future? So, again, these assessments are very, very important. And, by the way, Sandy was a great sport. I asked him if he wanted to do one of these assessments, and I sent him a link over the internet, and he did it, and it came back, and he graded out very similar to me, and it'll be neat when he has,
which may or may not be a good thing,
right? And it'll be neat when he has a chance to look the whole thing through. But these are really dynamic products. They're very reliable and practical in the use of assessing personnel at all levels of sport. More and more college teams are using these for determining who they're bringing in as recruits. You know, when you have a top recruit, you also want to know who you're getting psychologically. So I'm a real proponent of these.
I think we've been down this road before, addressed this topic, but it is a good question from the 303. Would your brand of testing have unearthed valuable information regarding Aaron Hernandez?
Absolutely. Oh, yes, absolutely. Because, you know, Aaron Hernandez is not unlike a lot of players in the NFL, only he carried out some behavior. And it really comes down to culture in his situation. You know, he comes from a real proud and Hispanic culture, and there's some real respect criteria in that culture. And so at some point when you disrespect someone in certain cultures, there's a different behavioral line, if you will, or a level where which they'll tolerate. And so, but no, we have specific personality assessments that would have told us or illuminated some of these deficit base in terms of his behavior. Von Miller is another case. I think, you know, some more of these in-depth personality assessments could really illuminate some maybe of the, you know, what we've described on a surfacey level as immaturity, but his lack of ability to adhere to a specific protocol and practice, we would be able to illuminate those as well.
What would you do right now with respect to Von Miller if you were the Broncos?
I would, you know, personally, I think Von needs a coach, a mental enhancement coach, not necessarily a psychologist. And that word kind of scares people, too. You know, when you say, oh, I'm a sports psychologist, yeah, we are, but I'm also really a mental coach. I coach athletes. I coach teams how to enhance themselves mentally. What Von needs right now is really some coaching about life skills, some life protocols that he needs to understand what to do, and then really kind of prioritize. I mean, this is his occupation. It doesn't last forever. The average length of an NFL career, I think, is 3.1 years. So, you know, he really needs a mental coach to really focus and work with him. And it's not babysit him. That's not what I mean. It doesn't have to hold his hand every day and, you know, have him home by 10 o'clock or anything like that. But teach him those vital life skills every day that he's going to need, because he's in a high, high profile environment, and he needs to understand that there are certain things he needs to do off the field to be able to perform at a high level on the field.
Good question with the 303. Going back a few years, would you care to hazard a guess as to how the likes of Lyle Alzado, Jack Tatum, John Matuzak might have fared in these assessments?
Yeah, great question. Yeah, those guys would have probably fared high in neuroticism, I guess, because, you know, those guys are very high-intensity people and high kind of mood-changing people. And that's okay. See, a lot of these assessments don't necessarily rule people out. They can rule people in or they can rule people out. You know, you want some of that fire. You want some of that nasty that the Alzados brought and that the Matusaks and those kind of people got. But what you just have to understand is, you know, these assessments will also help you illuminate the good things that they do. You know, the openness, the agreeableness. I happen to know Lyle Alzado, and I'll tell you what, there's not a man with a bigger heart. I mean, the guy played his guts out on the field, but he would help you in any way, shape, or form he could too. So with some of the negative things that maybe we would also be able to illuminate the positive personality characteristics as well.
We'll get to the fascinating subject of the Nuggets.
Yes.
And what has happened, not so much right in your wheelhouse in terms of quantitative analysis, but qualitative analysis.
Oh, yes.
What's really going on within this organization and within the locker room and the team right now. 1126 Sandy Clef, Dr. Rick Perea, our in-studio guest. Your home for the best live and local sports talk continues to be Denver Sports Station Sports Radio, 104.3 The Fan.
I don't know why, but this old town just seems so hopeless. I ain't really sure, but it seems I remember the good times.
Plenty of questions for Dr. Rick Perea on the Total Beverage text line at 29588. And, of course, the phone lines are open at 303-228-1043. Sandy Clef with you on your home for the best live and local sports talk, Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. 303-228-1043 if you want to jump in on the phone lines. And, of course, the text line at 29588. The Nuggets.
Yes.
What do you make of Brian Shaw's reaction, basically over the last 3 weeks, perhaps for the entire month of February, to what is going on? Is it possible that he can be right and still remain ill-advised to continue along this path,
yes,
criticizing players so completely in a public forum?
Yes, and I thought you did a great job earlier in the day talking about how perhaps he may be right in principle, but yet from the humanistic, from the psychological perspective, when you really kind of call people out and throw them under the bus in a public forum, that can really diminish the social, okay, because we talk about social and task cohesion, the social cohesion of a team. And so I think maybe he's not quite understanding that, yeah, from an accountability perspective, it's a great methodology to use to hold people accountable, but you got to do it behind closed doors. You can't really do it in a public forum. And that goes back to really his inexperience as a head coach. And that goes back even further to these personality assessments, Sandy. You know, I would bet probably, you know, my youngest born, and probably he would not be happy to hear me say that, but I would bet him that the Kroenkes did not use any kind of personality assessment when assessing who to hire as a head coach. Here's another way that we can use these assessments in terms of how the real world uses them, the business community. When they bring in high stakeholders, they use personality assessments to hire people. You know, Brian Shaw, I think, has a lot of the pedigree that you need to be an effective coach, but he's a rookie head coach. And I think this is just a case of him not understanding that, although, as you mentioned, he may be right in principle,
right,
but you really can't hold that level of accountability in a public forum because players will not react very positively to that. And that will diminish that social cohesion that's absolutely necessary for teams to perform at a high level.
Even if, as Chris Dempsey from the Denver Post suggested a couple of hours ago here, even if he's saying things in public no different from what he is telling the players in private.
Yes.
It's still damaging when it's out there for the public to see and hear.
Yes, because players will internalize that as them being exposed, okay? It's one thing to do it behind closed doors. I mean, I've obviously in my athletic background, you know, I've had coaches peel the paint on us at all levels, and they'd really, you know, they can really diminish you in many ways. But that's one thing. It's between you two. It's between the team, the family. But when you go out in public and really kind of verbally undress the players that are supposed to fight for you that night, the players that are supposed to fight with each other, for each other, for the team, it really doesn't build that cohesion, Sandy. I mean, we do research around this, and social cohesion is built by building people. It's not by breaking them down. And unfortunately, again, here we got the old guard coaching influence. Some coaches actually believe that you break down athletes and build them up. That methodology goes back to the military. We see it all the time. But I'm telling you right now, Sandy, that does not build social cohesion. And that's the little piece that people don't understand. Personnel is wonderful, but you have got to have a team that fights together, plays together, and believes in each other. And that kind of rhetoric will not build cohesion that is needed on this team.
From the 720, I hope Brian Shaw figures it out. He appears to be heading down the same road that Josh McDaniels did. Do you see any similarities there? I'm not sure I do in terms of coaching personality, but you know, he seems to have defied Shaw, what we expected from him as a coaching personality. I thought Patrick Waugh would be more blunt in your face in the way that Brian Shaw, in fact, has been.
Right. Well, here's the other factor, Sandy, that we don't know about. We don't know how much backing Shaw has from the front office. I mean, they may have come to him and said, you know what, do whatever you need to do this year. Clean that culture up. Clean that climate up. Do what you need to do because we're behind you 100%. You know, because they must have said something like that because the way his methodology, like I said, is certainly not building, that task and social cohesion on this team. So it is similar, but I think, you know, obviously we got to give him a little more time, but I would caution him. And by the way, Sandy, you know, head coaches have coaches too. They do in the real world of executives and business. And the way that these methodologies are going, in 20 years, I predict every NFL head coach, every NBA, NHL head coach, Major League Baseball will have an individual life and executive coach that coaches them on really how to use these methodologies to help them perform at peak levels too.
It's interesting because we talked a lot yesterday about the differences, not just in the respective win-loss records, but the differences that seem to exist and some surprising ones between Patrick Waugh and Brian Shaw, both technically rookie major professional head coaches. And yet one has an NBA background, but no head coaching experience. The other didn't have an NHL coaching background, but had years of head coaching experience on the major junior hockey level. That head coaching experience seems to have served Patrick Waugh, even without his having been over the last decade part of the National Hockey League, as opposed to Brian Shaw, who both as a player and an assistant coach has very much been a part of the NBA for 20 plus years.
Yeah, but he's been a part of the NBA as an assistant coach, and that's very different than a head guy. It's just like in any organization, a CEO is very different than middle management or upper management. Assistant coaches have a different practice and protocol every day. And so Brian Shaw has done what he's doing right now, Sandy, that accountability piece. He's done that his whole career as an assistant coach. And you can do that. You can get away with that. But as a head guy, you are the CEO of this organization. And at times, you've got to be able to articulate and really communicate your message in a very, you know, specific way. And it doesn't mean you say the truth sometimes. I mean, you have to really navigate and massage.
Massage the truth.
Massage that message. You have to. And the great ones can do that. So I think that's one lesson he'll learn with this experience he's had in the last few weeks.
Is there an operating procedure that in your mind would recommend if you're setting up any kind of good cop, bad cop scenario, that the head coach necessarily be one or the other, that his assistant coaching staff necessarily represent one or the other? Shaw had a line the other day that actually he's the good cop and his assistants ride the players a little harder. And, of course, my reaction was, if he thinks of himself as a good cop, what would he think a bad cop head coach looks and sounds like?
Right. Yeah. And he's right in the sense that his assistants, if they are going to be bad cops, they do need to be the bad cops. He needs to be the good cop in the public eye. And he needs
in
to
the
be
in the public eye.
Yes. In the public
but
eye.
But behind closed doors, isn't it more customary that the assistants dealing more with the players on a day to day basis kind of console the players, want the players to confide in them, put the proverbial arm around the shoulders of the players, and the head coach, maybe a more distant figure, more authority figure, is more often customarily the bad cop?
Yeah, yeah, that happens. But also the head guy does set the climate and culture behind the scenes too, though. When they're behind the scenes and they're at practice, that head guy is setting the climate and culture. But he has got to be the good cop in the public eye. And that's the piece he does not quite get.
That's the piece that's missing.
The piece that's missing right now. And it'll come if the Nuggets are patient with him, because he seems like a very thoughtful, intuitive, and really introspective person, which is all great characteristics. But you've really got – your rhetoric has to be very specific and communicate your message in a very positive way when you're that good cop and head coach.
303-228-1043-295-88 on the Total Beverage text line. I was thinking as you were talking about a conversation we had with Peter McNabb, the Avalanche television analyst, and Peter really gets into the psychological aspect of sports as deeply and as intelligently as anybody doing commentary on a regular basis. And I thought he made an interesting observation about Patrick Roy yesterday. He said, I've been to at least 90% of the practices this year. I have not yet once seen Patrick Roy yell at a player. Not once. Mm. Not once. And this runs counter again to the reputation that Roy brought with him of being a rather volatile character and at least on occasion a yeller and a screamer.
Right. Yeah, but he's very astute psychologically to understand.
He is, isn't he?
Yes, absolutely. He understands that he has to, I hope we're not overusing this word today, massage his players and help them really understand peak level performance. you know, he when you come into a team like this, and even though he's got that vast background in hockey and coaching and also in playing, you have to come in and you have to build a system. You have to build a system on your team, and that's both physically and psychologically. And I think he's doing a great job because obviously the outcome is there. But, you know, I haven't been at every practice, you know, like the commentator has. But I'll tell you what, if he's never heard him yell at a player, that's great as long as he can set the parameters and the motives. The intrinsic motivation is what's key with that, and that is getting players to play because they love the game, they love the experience, not the external outcomes like when, you know, so it's got to be intrinsically based, and he seems to have done that very well.
I want to have you consider this. We'll go into the break. And it's always fascinating when you come on how people react to you. At least in my mind it is. From the 303. And this isn't necessarily designed to be argumentative, I'm sure. But why don't you react to this? Patrick Waugh has good players on his team. Brian Shaw has bums. It's that simple. See if you agree as to whether it's that simple. We continue for another quarter hour with Dr. Rick Perea in studio, right to the top of the hour at noon. Sandy Clough with you on your home for the best live and local sports talk. Denver Sports Station, Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. Our final segment, our final show, final day of February 2014. Sandy Clough, Dr. Rick Perea in studio on your home for the best live and local sports talk. Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan, Denver's sports station. All right, Dr. Perea, Patrick Wise, good players on his team. Brian Shaw has bums. It's that simple.
That's grossly oversimplistic. If it were that simple, then, okay, that argument would stipulate that you don't even need a coach. Just put great players
that's
out on
right.
the
field.
Just
right.
put them out on the ice, and they'll win, okay? You know, one of the first things we learned.
Of course,
learned,
and a year ago at this time, the Nuggets had the good players, and the Avalanche had all the bums.
Need we say more?
Yeah.
I mean, that supports it all. One of the first things I learned in my PhD program in terms of organizations is you understand that organizations have a climate and culture. That is set by leadership. And leadership on the team will either enhance that or can diminish that. So the notion that you have great players and it's that simple is just really ignorant. I mean, the root word of ignorant, Sandy, is ignore. That person's just ignoring a lot of information.
We have another, let me see here if I can find it, another text on that point. And he makes it kind of the same way you do, but in a different way. If Brian Shaw from the 720, if Brian Shaw believed he had bums or has bums, he wouldn't need to display the behavior and would preach the process.
Absolutely.
We'll weed out the bums.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Which and they may or may not do or may or may not have the ability to do. That isn't quite the way he's going, though. He would have no interest in commenting
right.
if they were just bums.
See, here's the inherent problem that professional coaches have, whether it's NBA or NFL, NHL, Major League Baseball, Major League Soccer. This is the problem, okay? When we study motivation in sports psychology, you have intrinsic and extrinsic motivation. Extrinsic motivation means you're motivated by external things. When you get paid money to play a sport, that's an external motivator. So inherently, NBA players, all these players that have guaranteed contracts, naturally, from a psychological level, they are not going to be as motivated as somebody who's intrinsically motivated. So you might say, okay, so then pro athletes aren't motivated. Well, here's the deal. People like Pete Carroll, people that are innovated, Bobby Knight, in fact, was one of them too. He had very creative ways, even though I don't always agree with his methodologies back in his day. But coaches who are creative can get professional athletes to perform at high levels if they use unique, cutting-edge, research, evidence-based protocols to do it. So I'm not saying that pro sports is not the pinnacle of sports. Inherently, when you pay someone to play, it's an extrinsic motivator, so you've got to find creative ways to motivate these athletes, Andy.
I got perhaps in a little bit of trouble yesterday for at least agreeing with a caller who pointed out that there is an intrinsic difference between an NHL locker room and an NHL kind of culture and the NBA locker room and the NBA culture. And we have a text here that brings that about and makes some of the same observations from the 303. The difference about hockey players and NBA players is the hockey players talk team, deflect attention from themselves, whereas in the NBA, it's all about the individual.
Yeah, I mean, there's some truth.
Even the way
to that.
The sport is marketed.
Yes. Well, and then you go.
Versus the NHL.
Yeah, and you go back. And you know who is also to blame for this? I think the texter is pretty accurate. But here's to blame to this. Who's recruiting these athletes? I mean, they have choices, okay? When you recruit an athlete, you have choices. I mean, do you look at their psychological, their physiological, their social aspects? What are you looking at? The NBA and the NFL, especially, Sandy, are athlete-driven sports. In other words, they look for the quantitative measurements, okay? But there are so many college basketball players out there that share the ball, that are good teammates, that have great intrinsic motivation. But guess what, Sandy? Those kids aren't drafted. Those kids aren't given shots because they don't have the 40-inch verticals, because they are not a certain size. They don't have certain hand size. And so what really the industries need to what needs to happen is they need to value the teammate, the qualitative aspects of being a great teammate, because you just can't have 5 or 10 physical specimens out there on the floor and expect great production. You got to have some of those kids that share the ball, that are 5'10 and not, you know, but they're quick, they're athletic, they share the ball, they understand team. They're for the team first and not me first. And if the NFL and the NBA would learn to recruit and draft players that are role players that can do that, we'd have more players in those industries that wouldn't be so me-based.
Leave you with the Jerry West comments. We were talking a great deal about them earlier today. West coming out and talking about the NBA being at its weakest point and identifying as one of the reasons for that excessive reliance on draft classes largely made up of one-and-done players.
Yes.
Who are neither physically nor psychologically equipped to handle the rigors of the NBA. That seemed to be the point made by the great Jerry West. Do you concur?
Absolutely, I do concur. Because, you know, again, it's what's driving this league. And again, when you recruit and you value players and it's only athletic-based and it's not qualitatively based in terms of the intangibles of what they bring to the game, that's what you're going to have. And so, again, if I respect Jerry West. I think he's been a great ambassador for the sport, and I think his viewpoint, we should stop and reflect upon it and understand that it has value and meaning.
And so often his viewpoint cuts against the grain of consensus opinion.
Yeah, and well, and then I like it even more, because I'll tell you what, he's a thinker. You know, Henry Ford once said, thinking is the hardest work there is. That's why so few engage in it. And most people don't really process and think, Sandy, but he is a thinker. But I will again reiterate, the NBA and the NFL are athlete-driven entities, and until they learn to value the players that are team-oriented, that are maybe not the best quantitatively, but they will make your team better incrementally, then that's when we will begin to shift, and we won't have so much reliance upon athletes that really aren't mature enough to handle the rigors of the NBA and the NFL.
From the 303, what you are talking about sounds like stereotyping to me. You ever watch Patrick Kane of the Chicago Blackhawks? Dude is a huge me guy. I would say in response to that, I'll let you respond too, he's also a 2-time Stanley Cup champion, Patrick Kane.
Yeah. Well,
and an Olympic star as well, a great international player.
Sure. Yeah.
Although he did not medal on Team USA this year.
Right. And I would say to the texter that stereotypes are really, you know, stereotypes can be harmful, but stereotypes can be helpful too. They help us organize content. They help us organize information so we can better assess, you know, the topic we're talking about. So stereotypes can be harming and limiting, but at the same time, they can be helpful. So I would just remind the texter that that knife cuts both ways.
It's been a pleasure over the last 13, almost 14 months now, and we trust it will continue.
Absolutely.
Our association with you on into the afternoon. We'll be hooking up with Drew Goodman and Scott Hastings, who I know are both great admirers of your work and love to listen when you're on the air. We will do this again and continue to do it on a very regular basis. It's, for I think our texters, one of the more interesting spots we do on the entire radio station.
Well, thank you, Sandy. Let me just first say this, that I got to be honest, I'm a little sad because, you know, I'm a big fan of you. I'm a big fan of the way you depict both the psychological and the sport context, and I really am a fan of what you do. And but I'll be with you anywhere. Hey, I'll run through a wall for you, Sandy. So you tell me when you need me, where, and I'm there for you.
All right, Coach. You're my coach much more than I could ever be yours. Appreciate it. We will be sitting in for at least the first hour today with Drew Goodman. I believe Scott is absent today. Scott sat through that basketball game last night, didn't he? No wonder he's in no condition to speak today. Who would be after sitting through? I did not watch from start to finish. I don't think I could have made it had I started with the game. I did not. I finished with the game. I did not start with the game last night. We'll see whether Drew Goodman was affected by even indirect exposure to the stench coming out of Pepsi Center last night as we continue on your home for the best live and local sports talk, Denver Sports Station. Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan. We'll talk to you tomorrow afternoon at 2:30 and Monday morning at noon right here on The Fan. Stay with us.